The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Kiefer and Curry. It is a great day to do a program because we are in the midst of March Madness,
yeah,
Tony. Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
Everybody go crazy. March Madness is tipping off. And it has become, and I think the reason we wanted to do this show today, Tony, is because this event, a basketball tournament, has become a national treasure. This is something that people that don't pay attention to sports much all year get caught up in. The bracket syndrome has become just a term of endearment in our society. When are you going to fail out your bracket? Have you failed out your bracket? Who do you like? It's people that have not seen these teams, cannot name five players probably in the entirety of college basketball, and yet this kind of consumes the nation. And I think it's a phenomenon that's going to be a lot of fun to talk about.
There's no doubt. And I know we're going to be talking about the phenomenon. I don't want to be this, this is why you need to fill out your bracket this way, but I did want to throw, I went in depth this morning, probably over the top, but I found some very interesting stats as far as in your picks. I just want to throw these out. Can I do this to you? Because I think I found some stuff. I've always heard, you know, we know that the past five champions have been one seeds. Did you realize it's been 10 years since the overall number one seed won a championship? That was Louisville back in 2013, which is amazing. It's been 31 years since a six seed made a Final Four appearance. So don't put your six seed in there. Here's one, and I had to do some digging. At-large teams that finish four games under 500 in their conference play are 5-0 in their first round games. And this year, there's one of those. It's West Virginia. So take that.
And wow.
Also, this is a common thing that a lot of people figure out, but when you're filling out your bracket, you just can't pull the trigger on it. A double digit seed has, of course, advanced to the Sweet 16 in 14 straight tournaments. You know, when people say 12 of the last 14, it opens the door to go, well, there were 2 years it didn't happen, so I'm not going to pick that seed. But the last 14 tournaments, double digit seeds have advanced to the Sweet 16. So I just wanted to give out a couple of things. If you're still filling out your bracket, listen to Kiefer and Curry show here, you're good to go. But I love the phenomenon. And I will say this, you know, I try to dumb down things because I'm like, why is this tournament so wonderful? And do you know what I'd say?
What's that?
Everyone can enjoy it. It doesn't matter. And I will give you 3.1 billion more chances to answer that question. That is the money that's going to be spent on March Madness brackets. That, of course, is documented. $3.1 billion are going to be bet. Yes, it's betting. If you're spending 10, 15, 20 bucks on a bracket and you're getting a return on it, that is called gambling. So I don't want to hear these people saying we shouldn't have a lottery in the state of Alabama. That's gambling. You're doing it at your pool. You're doing it at your office. You're doing it on the TV. You're doing it on ESPN. You're doing it on FanDuel, whatever you want to use. It is gambling. But $3.1 billion will be gambled on March Madness this year.
Wow. It's fascinating, the numbers that you just gave out. And it's become something that everybody's aware of, that these little nuances with seedings, because the picking the teams for the tournament's always controversial. There's always a couple left out, and there are certainly those this year. But it's the seedings by the committee that really is the most important function of this. And that didn't even begin until close to 1960. They just had a committee match the teams up for the tournament. They didn't even have a seed. After the first round, they would shuffle them all again and say, okay, we're going to put this team with this team, and et cetera. But there's some things that have emerged over the years, Tony, that are phenomenal to me, that statistically, the 12 seeds against the 5 seeds, mm-hmm. where, of course, you would think the 5 would have a huge advantage, in the last 20 years, the 12 seeds actually have a winning record against the 5 seeds.
Yep.
That's ridiculous.
Yep. And again, you're talking about, you know, seeding just because, and Kip, you're a gambler. I mean, you do gambling shows. You've seen this. You've seen the number 3 team in the country playing the number 16 team in the country, but the number 16 team is favored in the game. What is Vegas trying to tell you? Something's not right here. And we know those numbers ebb and flow throughout the year. And yeah, the 5-12 12 matchup, I think, is remarkable. There's also a 3-14. And again, we could go through, yep. it would take us a year to go through all these analytics on why you should choose what you want to. But that's the other thing I think is great about this game is just ask St. Peter's how special it is to be that Cinderella team. And even now, I mean, we saw it happen a couple of years ago. You can no longer put the one seed and just move them along because we finally had that 16 seed beat a one seed.
Finally happened. And I think that there's so many key points of this tournament's evolution of why it is what it is. That was one of the big missing pieces. No 16 had ever beaten a number one seed. And of course it happened when Virginia, number one the number one seed in the entire tournament, fell to Maryland, Baltimore County, in the first round, a 16 beat a one. And it's fascinating to see that happen because I saw somebody who, and I don't remember who the author was, but I read something a couple of years ago that says the NCAA tournament is such a phenomenon because it's a looking glass into being human with tragedy and triumph. And I really like that because I think it's the ultimate sport because you don't see the ultimate underdogs be able to achieve like this in other sports because they don't even qualify for the playoff. And let's start with something you told me yesterday that I find fascinating. I knew there was been discussions, but in your discussions on your show with the athletic director at UAB, there's even talks about expanding this tournament even further from 64 to double that size.
Yeah, I mean, Kip, 1939, do you know how many teams were in the first NCAA men's tournament?
Just a handful.
There were eight. We expanded that to 64 and 85, 65 in 2001. Then back about 12 years ago, we expanded to 68. I like to consider it 72 because I think the playing game, you're part of March Madness. It's 72 teams. But why they're wanting to do this, and I did a little homework here. In the NHL, 16 of the 32 teams make the playoffs 50%. In the NBA, 16 of the 30 teams make it 53%. In the NFL, 14, we just had playoff expansion a couple of years ago in the National Football League, adding a team on both sides as wild cards. Out of 32, 43% make it. Major League Baseball, 12 of the 30 teams make it 40%. Then if you want to look at college football, we can say 86 teams of the 129, which is 66%, made a bowl game, but only four teams truly can play for a national championship, which of course is about 3% now when they expand that to 12 teams in 2024 and 2025. And it was supposed to be 2026, but they moved it back. Why? There's going to be more money in the coffers there. Roughly 11%. And then when you look at college basketball, 68 of 353 teams make it in, roughly 19%. And so they're wanting to double that to, 136 teams and make it a 38% clip, which would still be below almost every major performance of any other teams or leagues out there. And so I'm all about it. I mean, you're talking about winning seven games as opposed to six games. The part that you brought up that I thought was really interesting, though, is the money aspects of it. And I want you to explain to people out there, because everyone talks about college football and the playoffs. The college football playoffs have nothing to do with the NCAA. They're totally autonomous. They're their own thing. They signed off after the BCS. It was out. And the CFP is its own thing. They take that money. But where does most of the money come from, Kip?
It's unbelievable, Tony, and it's a big head scratcher for me. And we talk about this a lot on my terrestrial radio show. It's astounding that in 1984, led by the University of Georgia and the University of Oklahoma, who teamed up to represent all of the conferences, basically, and all of the individual universities in a lawsuit against the NCAA. To try and strip them of television control, that case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the ruling went against the NCAA. So the college conferences now themselves have formed an organization that are completely in charge of TV rights. So the NCAA continues to operate only because of the NCAA basketball tournament and the massive expansion and value of that particular entity. Several years ago, CBS teaming up with Turner Sports of all networks, who have TNT and TBS and True TV. Those are the three networks that have NCAA games. Because you remember, Tony, just until recent years, you didn't get, all the games weren't on at the same time. These are all decisions that actually were very valuable to making this tournament so lucrative. But CBS and Turner teamed up to sign basically $1 billion a year agreement to be the exclusive networks for this. And that money that the NCAA gets from CBS/Turner is almost their entire revenue stream for operating budget. So the archaic dinosaur of do-nothings at the NCAA, who wasted tons of money on legal fees fighting the NIL situation, trying to ensure that college sports remained an amateur adventure. But, you know, if you're for free enterprise and an open market, it was really a hypocritical stance. But they spent millions of dollars trying to fight that. And now the NCAA has rendered themselves basically impotent, but they still are able to stagger on and continue because of the ridiculous amount of revenue they get from this tournament.
There is no doubt that the NCAA is dead in the water without college basketball, period. You mentioned that TV contract worth about $1 billion a year. It comes out to about $880 million a year. In an annual contract. It was just expanded in 2016 to the year 2032, and it's for over $9 billion. And I'll put this in perspective for you. The NCAA posted a net loss of $56 million in 2020. Why? Because there was no basketball tournament. That's amazing, because this tournament usually governs and brings in about $1.14 billion. And here's the great thing about the NCAA. And again, the NCAA, what people don't realize, is a non-for-profit. It's a non-for-profit entity, just like the PGA is a non-for-profit. They're making money, but they can't make for-profit money. What's amazing about this is 90% of the money that's brought in from the NCAA basketball tournament is in turn given back to the universities just from the basketball tournament. That's why you want to see expansion, because you want more teams to take in that money. And I brought this up and I thought it was interesting. I was talking to Mark Ingram about UAB and you know, it hurts the fan base. It certainly hurts the seniors. It hurts the guys. They can't make March Madness. But why is it so important? For each game that you get into, you can win, and you can win what is known as a unit. And obviously, if you're in one of those playing games, you have the capability of winning up to six units, because you have to win six games to make it to a national championship game. Each one of those units is worth $338,887. So if you win five games, do the math. And then if you've got like the Big Ten, where you've got 8, 9, 10 teams in every single year, think about the money influx that comes into your universities from that. Now, that money doesn't necessarily all go to the team that's playing. It's usually sent to the conference, and then the conference and the NCAA ask conferences to do this, to actually take the money and evenly split it out among all of their members. Albeit, though, if you are that team that's bringing that money, sometimes they give you two shares as opposed to one. So, I mean, that is, and that money is huge. If you're talking about a St. Peter's that wins four games, think about the influx of money in a small little tiny school like St. Peter's and how important it is to their institution.
Oh, remember the run from Florida Gulf Coast?
Oh, man.
It's been 10 years now. But they got the tag Dunk City.
Yep.
I mean, it put them literally on the map, Tony. Nobody had ever heard of Florida Gulf Coast before.
Nope.
So that's what the power of this tournament can do. There's so many reasons why it's the great spectacle that it is now. But I find it fascinating that until the 1950s, the NIT tournament was far more prestigious. That's where teams wanted to go. A lot of teams turned down the opportunity to go to the NCAA because the NIT was the more heralded place to go. And I also found it fascinating that there was a year where they actually scheduled those a week apart, and the CCNY, the City College of New York, went to the NCAA tournament and won it, and then played in the NIT and won that too.
How about
and
that?
Played Bradley University to sweep both major tournaments, the first team to ever do that, and the only team to ever do that.
No,
so
now,
the NIT was more prestigious.
Yeah, and now, you know, I mean, if you go to some of the smaller colleges, you're never going to see it at North Carolina. They're not going to hang an NIT championship banner. They're not going to do it.
No!
You will never see that at UCLA. But, and when we're recording the show here on a Tuesday, I will be down to see the UAB Blazers taking on Southern Miss tonight. I thought UAB would probably get bounced a little early if, in fact, they made the big dance. They had to win that last game, and they got blown out, so they didn't make it. But they did make it as a 3 seed in the NIT. It does allow the fan base. We'll have 5,000 or 6,000 people down at Bartow Arena later on tonight. It gives those seniors a chance to play some more basketball. Senior night's not their last night, which I think is great for them. And it gives the fan base to not only you gather in more practices, but also see their basketball team play a little bit more. And then, to your point, you know, you got the NIT. Now, a lot of the Group of Five conferences, if you win the regular season championship, you're guaranteed an NIT bid. And then, obviously, if you don't win your conference tournament, then you may get bounced because most of these smaller conferences only get one bid. But now you got the CBA. I think you got something called the CAA. I was looking at the lineup today. There's like 75 college basketball games after the season tonight. I'm like, where the hell are all these games coming from?
It's crazy.
And you don't know who's going to show up and what passion is going to be in there. But listen, you ask these basketball kids, these kids that are playing hoops, they want to continue to play. And a lot of these guys will never play at another level, 99% of them. So if they continue to play, I think it's fantastic. But yeah, you know, you talk about just how wonderful this is. And I think about the two biggest sporting events in this country. And I could say March Madness, first of all, because it's college hoops from 10 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, basically for 3 weeks. It bums me out every time a round goes by because I know we're cutting it in half. And I know that we could have and there's nothing better than watching a game and having the swim lane of six other games going off across the top of the board and seeing the scores change. I absolutely love that. And then, you know, we could certainly talk about the gambling aspect of why so many people are interested in this because they've got some skin in the game. There's nothing better than going to a game, Kip, and having money on that game. There is nothing better. You can watch it on TV, but when you're in person and you've got skin on that game, there's no better thing than when you win that game. It's a beautiful thing. But I mean, kudos to whoever created the March Madness bracket for creating this unbelievable thing. The other sporting event, I think, is the Super Bowl, and it's got a lot of the same atmospheric and environmental protections of why a fan actually loves that sport, because it's all-inclusive. I mean, that's why Super Bowl, we have 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. We ramp it up. We're talking about it. You can't get away from it. And March Madness is the same way. What other sporting event can the woman back in HR win $210 in their bracket challenge because she doesn't know what the hell she's doing? She's voting for her favorite mascot, and she pulls it off.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how everybody participates. My grandson, yes, I am just barely old enough to have a grandson. My grandson was born in 2020. For the 2021 tournament, he wasn't even a year old yet. And my son had him in his high chair with different color blocks and a whole bracket to fill out. And he would go, okay, Kentucky against Kansas State. And he'd put a purple and a blue down, and King would select the one he wanted, and he filled out his bracket. And we had the family challenge. And after the first round, King was in second place. So it really kind of speaks to the uniqueness of this event. Tony, I think the tournament has also been really fortunate to have some major moments that have kind of transformed it from just another sporting event into this human drama that everybody embraces, and Cinderella always has a chance. We talked about some of the great Cinderellas in recent years, but go back to the 1960s, even in the midst of all the civil rights situation, there were a couple of very prominent events that happened. In 1963, Mississippi State actually advanced to the semifinals, the Final Four, but there was no Final Four. You just went and played the team that was the committee decided was the higher qualified team. You played on the road, and then, you know, there was no gathering of all four Final Four teams until the mid-60s in Seattle. But Mississippi State was supposed to go to Chicago and play Loyola and really didn't want to go because, get ready for this, gasp, Loyola had four black players. So Mississippi State was going to boycott and not even go to the game, and there was a lot of legal injunctions and everything else. They ended up going. And then just 3 years later, of course, the famous 1966 game when Kentucky lost in the NCAA final, mighty Kentucky with Adolph Rupp, to Texas Western, which is now UTEP, with five black starters. And it really kind of started to change the societal perception of everything. So that tournament not only is interwoven in sports history, but it's certainly in social justice and a lot of the things that we concentrate on today. And I will also submit the first primetime final was in 1972. That was the first time they played on a Monday night. That was the game that UCLA beat Memphis in a great game that went all the way down to the wire. UCLA, Bill Walton made 21 of 22 field goals, scored 44 points, and everybody in the country saw it because it was on gasp. Well, Monday night football had proved that there was a lot of sports fans that were dying to watch events. And I think those kind of subtle changes are some of the things that put this tournament on the map.
There's no doubt. And, you know, we love, and we talked about expansion. A lot of people are like, you know, why should half the league get in? I tell you why half the league gets in. I mean, it keeps your team in. I mean, even in the NBA, you could have a losing record and make the playoffs. Are you going to win the championship? Probably not. But it does allow you to, obviously, you know, enrich your coffers a little bit, get some more home field. It extends the season. You know, in the National Football League, the only reason they really haven't expanded is because just of the violent nature of the game. I mean, every game is another game where you're running 45 miles an hour into a brick wall. But I love the fact that in March Madness, we've had, you know how many different winners we've had since 1939? How many different teams have won the national championship?
Got to be a ton.
It's 37. We've had 30. I mean, we think about the UCLAs and the John Wooden's days, and of course, that was back when you could recruit anybody and anyone you wanted. It was like college football and Bear Bryant. You'd go out and get the 100 best guys. You didn't have stringent things based on who you recruited and how many you could actually recruit. But 37 different teams, and when you're talking about teams like Cincinnati and you know some of these smaller teams, we certainly got the Indianas, we got the Michigan States, and we got teams like that. But you go back to Oregon back in 1939, you're talking about Oklahoma State, Holy Cross won a championship in 47. You mentioned CCNY, 24-5 in 1950. They won, LaSalle's won a national championship. Hell, San Francisco won back-to-back championships in 55 and 56, and you better believe they still have banners hanging there. I mentioned Loyola, Chicago, Cincinnati. So, I mean, yeah, that all inclusivity port of you know, allowing your teams to actually taste that wonderful sweetness of winning a national championship at any level is a beautiful thing in college basketball. I think it's great.
Yeah, and let's cap the expansion discussion, because thinking about it last night, okay, you go to 128, you double the field, but we're already playing play-in games on Tuesday and Wednesday, so why not just have a whole nother slew of games on those days instead of everybody taking off work Thursday and Friday, which I can't tell you, Tony, how many people I know that get NCAA March Madness-itis on Thursday and Friday in the first round. I guarantee you already the work rate is way down now after the COVID experience and people are not used to going to the office anymore. But I guarantee you they're veritable ghost towns on those days. But why not go ahead and double that? Just play games all day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That's the only change that will be necessary to facilitate this.
No, there's no doubt. And kudos to the Birmingham folks for finally landing some regional games. I will be one of those guys calling in sick on Thursday and Saturday. Yeah. Albeit, I wish like hell Auburn wasn't in our region. I don't know who they had to pay to get into Birmingham, only 2 hours north of their campus near Opelika. But that's certainly making it much more difficult to get tickets, because if they win their first round game, that Saturday night's going to be a tough ticket to get. But yeah, kudos to them. And I think it's been 15, 16 years since Birmingham's had a region. It's amazing. You put a little money into the Legacy Arena, next thing you know, you've got yourself a regional thing and maybe something bigger down the road. So yeah, I just think it's a wonderful thing. And there's something else I wanted to mention, and I don't think people realize this. One of the reasons I kind of like the XFL and I like some of these smaller leagues is because you win based on, or you get paid based on whether you win or not. There's nothing better than when you see these guys making $35 million a night, regardless of whether they even take the field. It's like, where's the passion? But when you're paying a guy, hey, I'm going to give you $15,000 if you win, but $7,500 if you lose. The NCAA March Madness bracket is the only system in place in all major sports that assigns a monetary value based on your performance. We talked about that unit space. So the more you win, the more money. Now, NIL outside the NIL, players don't see any of that money, but the universities do, and you better believe how important it is to universities to certainly grab a piece of that pie.
It's such a phenomenal event, and you mentioned the first two rounds are the best because that's when all the possibilities pop up, and that's when you get the shockers, and it's a lot different, again, just in recent history. CBS was the only network broadcasting the game, so you got whatever game CBS decided that your region would get. And they did a lot of flip arounds, and they'd go right down to the end of games that were close. You know, we're going to switch you to so-and-so. But now it's a whole different dynamic because you've got four different networks putting on every single game. So now we are in the era of sports overload, and I personally love it. There were things that were charming about the cut-ins in the last minute when, okay, we're going to go. This game is 65-65. And I mean, that was cool. But now you can pick and choose. You can still do that, but you can go to that game whatever you want. CBS is not in control. So it's amazing to me, Tony, that in an era where it's so easy to criticize decisions that are made in government and business and banking and everything else under the sun, the right moves have actually been made in this tournament to grow it into the event that it is today.
There's no doubt. And there's one thing that'll never happen. We talked about the 16 finally beating the one. It's so hard to fill out a good bracket that normally halfway through the bracket, and even ESPN does this, they have a sweet 16 bracket. You start all over again. You could blow up your bracket, but you can start again. 16. 1-9-2-2-3-3-7-2-0-3-6-8-5-4-7-7-5-8-0-8. I don't even know what the hell that number is, but that's the chances of picking a perfect bracket. It will never happen. Hey, before we go, we got just a couple minutes here left, and I wanted to go back to a show we did previously because we did a whole show. And by the way, you can listen to all of our shows on the TKR app. Thanks to the 100,000 folks who have downloaded the app. And of course, you can listen to Kiefer and Curry. It's our most listened to show through the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. Just search Kiefer Curry. Kiefer and Curry or Tony Curry Radio and check it all out. Mikayla Shiffrin, we were talking about records being broken. It's International Women's Month. We'll talk about our four favorite women coming up on our next Kiefer and Curry show next week. Mikayla Shiffrin has broken the record of Stenmark Rolland, I guess his name is, with her 87th World Cup race. And I've seen a lot about that. Maybe it's because it's International Women's Month. How big of a record is that for Kip Kiefer? Do you care?
Well, I mean, any accomplishment of that magnitude is a big deal to me, even if it's a sport that I don't follow. And I have to admit that I don't watch much skiing.
Yeah.
But I know that's going to come as a shocking revelation. But again, with the sports overload, you were, you know, I guess you can harken back to another era where you were much more likely to be experiencing a lot of that because the classic ABC show, Wide World of Sports, always did a great job every Saturday when there wasn't just a plethora of choices of keeping you up to date on those kind of sports and those kind of performers. So I'm really not aware of all the details of that accomplishment, but just how you laid it out there very well, Tony, to reach that kind of a level of performance is something that if you're a sports fan, it doesn't matter what the sport is. It's about achievement, and congratulations to her. That's remarkable.
Now, you're talking about a couple of guys here who used to watch the Wild World of Sports to see a guy on a motorcycle jump buses. That was a sporting event, too. It was probably the best Saturday of the year.
Spanning the globe, baby. Yeah, spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sports, the thrill of victory,
There's no doubt.
The agony of defeat.
Indeed. Kiefer and Curry Show. We do it every single week here. We hope you enjoy the show. Listen to our podcast on the TKR, Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. And next week, Kip, since it is International Women's Month, we thought we'd get off sports a little bit. I'm going to do the Mount Rushmore of women in Kip's life.
I like it.
And I can already tell you what one of those women are. And it's probably the same thing in my family as well. But I want you to pick four women who don't necessarily have to be a sports related. They could be politicians. They could be scientists. They could be your sister. They could be anyone you want. But I want your four favorite women in your life coming up on our next show. Okay.
As long as I don't have to climb the mountain and chisel them in myself, I move furniture this weekend and I barely can move, so I'm out for the actual carving.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.